This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen, and I thank you so much for listening and supporting the podcast. Definitely a reminder, go check out reallifepharmacology.com, go subscribe there, get your free PDF on the top 200 drugs. Good little study guide, whether you're just looking for a refresher in clinical practice or whether you're going through pharmacology classes, preparing for board exams, whatever the case may be there. Just a great little thing that I put together based upon my experience in taking exams and working in clinical practice for several years. So with that, let's get into the drug of the day, and that's going to be varenicline. Brand name of this medication is Chantix. I do see it used a fair amount, definitely, and the primary and pretty much the only use I see it used for is smoking cessation. Now, how does this drug work? How does it help patients stop smoking? So, if you remember, nicotine receptors play an important role in the body, and they really give that reward, that positive feedback from the action of smoking and ingesting nicotine from tobacco products. So, what varenicline does is actually it's considered a partial agonist, so it partially stimulates those nicotine receptors. So it gives you a little bit, potentially, of that reward sensation. But what it also does when it stimulates those receptors, it helps block those receptors from the full nicotine action that you get from smoking, for example. So again, this drug blocks the action of that nicotine, which helps reduce the reward of smoking. So if you remember that dopamine or dopamine in the central nervous system gives that reward type feedback. So varenicline helps kind of reduce that reward potential. In addition, there is possibility it can help reduce withdrawal symptoms when patients do pick that stop date and they want to quit there. As far as dosing goes, pretty straightforward for the most part here. It's a little bit of a taper up schedule. Most patients are going to start out with 0.5 milligrams once a day for 3 days, I believe. Then it's 0.5 twice a day. That's usually for 4 days. And if all things are going well, it's tolerated, then we go up to 1 milligram BID after that first week of titration there. So you can certainly run into adverse effects like with any medication. Probably one of the most common dose-dependent adverse effects, well, there's probably two of them. One is GI upset. So there's a few different ways we can tackle that or potentially alleviate that. So one, first, you know, talk with your patient, ask them how they're taking it. So giving it with food or right after eating and with a full glass of water might help with stomach upset and that type of thing. Another possibility that we may have to look at is reducing the dose if it's just totally intolerable for the patient to continue to take it due to the GI upset and that sort of thing. And then, yeah, if it's, you know, absolutely, I'm not going to take this anymore, well, then we've got to find a different option to potentially help these patients quit smoking. So GI upset, insomnia is the other most common one that I have seen in clinical practice. Also potentially associated with that are abnormal or vivid dreams. So that's definitely something that I have seen patients report quite a bit. So again, you're going to have to look at that patient clinically and, you know, determine the severity and the risks versus benefits of continuing therapy and that type of thing. But definitely something that you want to recognize and be aware that, that patients may experience. Now, with something like insomnia, for example, that could be due to the drug. That's certainly a real possibility. But there's also potential that if the patient has stopped smoking, that could be one of the withdrawal symptoms from smoking too. So in practice, in real life, it's sometimes difficult to tease that out as to what's doing what. Same thing with symptoms of, you know, anxiety and restlessness, headaches. You know, is that due to the drug or is that due to withdrawal symptoms from smoking and nicotine there? So again, kind of asking, inquiring with the patient about what's going on, the severity of those adverse effects, really, really important things to do. Some rare things that have been reported, psychiatric changes such as, you know, suicidal thoughts or behavior, that has been reported in case reports. So again, extremely, extremely rare. But we have had some clinical trials come out after the fact, I believe, saying that, you know, maybe there really isn't a risk of those, you know, adverse effects. So I think, at least from my perspective, that the jury's kind of out there. It's still something I think we should be aware of and pay attention to. And I think it's a good thing to do, you know, when a patient's starting any medication that may affect the central nervous system. Sometimes some really bizarre and strange things rarely can happen. So definitely important to at least be aware of that and make sure our patients are staying safe there. And then one other really rare one that has been reported is potentially lowering seizure threshold. So I would say in most patients without any risk factors for seizures or you know, no history or anything like that, you know, I haven't ever seen it be an issue in clinical practice, not saying it hasn't been. But if somebody has a seizure history, then we're probably going to want to do a risk-benefit assessment as to, you know, what are other options? Should we consider something else? Because which can be a challenge because, you know, one of the other drugs that, you know, we sometimes use for smoking cessation, bupropion, has that risk of lowering that seizure threshold and increasing the risk for seizures. So definitely need to be a little bit careful there. Okay, so when to quit smoking? This is a question that comes up with various agents, and I wanted to talk about varenicline quickly here. So upon taking the drug, when should patients stop smoking? So kind of initially, the package insert was indicating day 8, you should stop smoking. So you kind of do that dose titration, and then day 8 is going to be your quit date for smoking. Well, you know, in clinical practice, there's definitely been some different ways of doing it now. So you may see patients try to titrate their smoking over a period of time. You may see a patient, you know, pick a stop date 2 weeks out or 3 weeks out. So you really need to work with patients and figure out what they want to do, what their goal is, and identify which strategy is probably best for your patients. So there is a little bit of, you know, dissent as to, you know, what the best strategy is. And I don't think, in my opinion, that it's a one-size-fits-all type of thing. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll finish up with drug interactions. Looking ahead to 2021, we have updated content as far as BCPS, NAPLEX, ambulatory care, medication therapy management, geriatrics exam. All of our resources have been updated, so we have been working on that tirelessly to get that up and ready to go, and we do that annually. So if you're listening to this podcast later on, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, we look at our content once a year, right before the year's end, usually in the fall, early winter. and make sure you have access to the most up-to-date content if you're preparing for one of your exams. If you're another healthcare professional just looking to hone your skills, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. That's got links to everything we have there. Lots of Amazon books. You can get an Audible book for free if it's your first one. So go try that out. Support our sponsor, meded101.com, and help support this podcast as well. Greatly appreciative to all of you who have done that already. All right, so let's finish up on drug interactions. With varenicline, there really isn't a ton of drug interactions. So that's a nice thing, a comforting thing, that we generally don't have to think too hard about the medication. At least in my mind, there's none that say, oh my gosh, you know, they're on this drug. No way can we use varenicline at all. If I do see seizure medications on a patient's medication list, that is definitely something I look at and think about and certainly review on a case-by-case basis, whether it's worth the risk or not. Other medications to think about, use of alcohol, probably not a good idea, may exacerbate risk for psychiatric changes and things like that. So in general, that's definitely discouraged at a minimum. Quinolone antibiotics, trimethoprim, those can actually increase concentrations potentially of varenicline. Again, probably not a total absolute contraindication. And for quinolones and trimethoprim, you're likely not going to be on those medications chronically. But if you happen to notice, hey, you know, my patient's reporting a lot more insomnia, a lot more stomach upset, you know, potential other adverse effects. It could be an adverse effect from the antibiotic, but it could be an adverse effect from increased varenicline concentrations as well. So whenever we add new drugs, you got to think about that, okay? You got to think, okay, what other drugs might be affected? And that's a situation where varenicline could be increased. And one last one, a little bit more of a chronic medication, are the H2 blockers. Specifically, cimetidine is probably the worst. Famotidine potentially could do it as well. So these can increase the concentrations of varenicline. And if you're curious or want to really nerd out, it's potentially due to OCT inhibition. So if you remember, that's basically a transporter channel in the kidney that sometimes pumps out certain drugs and things like that. So by the H2 blocker inhibiting that particular molecule, that can increase the concentration of varenicline in the bloodstream by essentially reducing the outflow of the drug out through the bladder and urine. So I think that's going to wrap it up for today. Thank you so much for listening. Again, go support sponsor meded101.com/store. Sign up at Real Life Pharmacology. Get your free PDF, certainly at no cost to you. If you enjoyed the show, leave a rating, review, or share us with a classmate. Email us to a student, friend, anyone who's studying pharmacology, I think, could definitely pick up a few practice pearls from this podcast. So hope you enjoyed the podcast today and found it useful for your practice. I thank you so much for listening. Take care and have a great rest of your day.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.